Thank you. Be seated. Your oral argument from petitioner in Maple Run versus Monahan. Eileen Appellant, excuse me.
May it please the court. What we have in this case for decision by the court today is what can and what is lawfully possible for a legislature, the legislature of the state of Texas, to do when one of the MUDs is underwater. That was the situation that faced the Texas legislature.
I missed that one.
When the municipal utility, when the MUD's underwater. That's the issue. Who has the authority under the Constitution to take action to solve that problem? And what types of action can they take? And what limitations may apply to that action? In this case, the Maple Run and Austin MUD had been the subject of various litigation since its original establishment in the 1980s. It was more of a working class area, and it ended up with 400 to 500 homes and users in it instead of the 2,000 that everybody had so gloriously projected back in the 80s, in the early 80s. That, of course, left this district with a substantial problem as to the bonds that it issued. It had issued both contract bonds, along with the city of Austin, which took 85% of the money, and also some district bonds, which were used for the individual sewers and in the area. This has been in and out of litigation between the developer, the MUD district, the city of Austin, off and on now for several years. Senator Barrientos introduced a general, what looked like a general law, was a general law that would have covered several MUD districts, several in Travis County, and subsequently that became Senate Bill number 1261. Senate Bill 1261 specifically applies to only one MUD, according to the stipulations, only one municipal utility district. That utility district is Maple Run at Austin. That's the way the bill finally came out after the legislature and the committees got through it.
And isn't it a fair inference that it was intended that way?
I'm not so sure it is, Mr. Justice Heck. I don't know. The record shows that there was a lot more political maneuvering in connection with this act than the stipulations show. I understand the court's ordered up the entire record, and there are some affidavits and other evidence in the record that do show that the result of how this act came to be only the Maple Run.
Are the stipulations to the extent that it's an agreed case?
It was submitted on stipulations, Your Honor.
So is it an agreed case under the rules? And if so, does that take away the affidavits and other evidence you're talking about?
No, they're in the record. It's just how it got there.
That's not my question. They may be in the record.
I believe it's basically being submitted as a great case. Anyway, so even if it was our first deliberately, intentionally from the outset, directed at Maple Run, we don't believe that makes it a special or local law.
Even if the legislature intended that
even
apply only to one month.
Even if the day it was introduced, that was the intention. We don't believe that's the case, and we believe that issue is left open in the record under the stipulations. The stipulations say the result is it only applied to one. It doesn't say that was always the intent, or that was the specific intent.
So I just mean at the end.
At the end it did. It came out to be this one. That's stipulated.
But you also say you can't infer that even at the end it was intended to apply to only one month.
I believe at the end there was no question
that it was intended
to apply only to this month as a result of the various machinations that occurred.
If this weren't a MUD and the legislature intended that it apply this narrowly, would that violate the Constitution?
It would depend on whether the legislature had been granted the authority by the people of Texas in another section of the Constitution, which this court would find superseded and what I call overrides the prohibition of Article 3, Section 56. They've done that in the school cases and some of the others.
If this applies to only one MUD, and the legislature intended that it only apply to one MUD, then it sounds to me like you agree that it would violate Article 3, Section 56, but for the other section in Article 16.
I have a very difficult time making a real good classification argument on that.
So this boils down to, from your perspective, whether Article 16, the section in Article 16 authorizes this.
Well, the Section 59 basically preempts the field here as far, specifically as far as arguments under Article 3, Section 56 go.
I don't recall any cases saying that a MUD district falls within Article 16, Section 59.
Oh, yes, sir. They're not only cases, Your Honor, just said they are also specifically in the enabling statutes in the Water Code. There are several decisions whereby, like the various flood controls, any of these types, and statutes specifically, I believe, let me check my notes here, 49001A1 of the Water Code, which is cited, specifically says that municipal utility districts are created under this statute in this clause. The cases talk about some of its brothers and sisters or whatever these orphans, various political subdivisions are out there, these municipal utility districts. Some of them, planned districts, some of them are more private corporations.
So your argument is that the MUD districts are created pursuant to the Water Code, and the Water Code exists pursuant to Article 16, Section 59?
No, sir. The argument is that Article 16, Section 59 specifically says that these types of districts can be created by the legislature.
Not on the face of it.
Well, it doesn't say what you call it. It doesn't say that you have to call it a municipal utility district.
Okay, that's fine. Go ahead.
I mean, but what I'm saying is I think the law is clear here that all of these kinds of districts that have been created under these sections of the Water Code, and it used to be 54011 and now it's 49001, are specifically created under the authority of that constitutional amendment. And they do play a role in conservation reclamation. The other thing they play a role in, and Mr. Justice Heck on the other point, is not only under the statute, there is one other argument, and that's under the common law. The court imposed, or the court created, common law about the general interest of the people of the state of Texas, matters in which the people of the state of Texas have an interest. The best example I had was the recent case out of Fort Worth. I imagine it'll get here, was the one where, you know, it's obvious that you can take judicial notice almost that DFW Airport has a substantial effect on everybody in the state because people have to fly through there and they're going to miss their planes and be late. Therefore, that was justification why the DFW was not a special act. So there is general case law out there. Now, this case, unlike the position they've taken, I believe in this instance there were two separate reasons why this law, as a general law, can be upheld as a general law in the interest of the people of the state at large. Number one, it is an attempt by the legislature to cure the possibility, the substantial possibility, of a default on indebtedness of a political subdivision of the state of Texas. And this MUD is a political subdivision of the state of Texas.
Was there a question on how many MUDs in this state could take advantage of that particular legislation for that purpose?
I think the brackets were drawn because this was the one that it was designed most likely was the one that had the need. So
doesn't that then prove the premise that it is a special law, that they just put it to the exact need that they saw at that particular time?
But my point, Mr. Justice Baker, is I think under 59 they can do this. I think the statute could have said Maple Run in Austin is hereby dissolved. The city of Austin.
Should they give any credence that it started to say that and they changed it?
Well, it didn't start to say that. It started to say that there were going to be a whole group of districts that could use this provision and what happened. Somewhere along the way that changed, these brackets were added, and it all became where it narrowed in and narrowed in and narrowed in to where there was only one that could use it. But my point, and the point that the Municipal Utility District takes, is that under the Constitution, and under it being in the best interest of the people of Texas, under the case-made law, in both instances, the Constitution clearly declares this whole area of water reclamation, maintenance, as well as the improvement of the facilities, the maintaining the facilities, to be a primary statewide interest.
How is this in the interest of anybody other than the people who live in that mud district to bail out the mud?
I believe it is.
It's not in the interest of the people in Austin, is it? To bail out the...
Well, the people of Austin created this mud in a way. Their elected officials did. I mean, we're in at its birthing. You know, one of the things I thought about was arguing this under the Family Code, that maybe what we're talking about is a parent's responsibility to take care of its child. Because if you read that consent agreement, which is clearly in the record, which was a major part of the record before, below the court, you will see, Your Honor, that this mud couldn't do anything, hardly, that Austin didn't have to say yes to. Austin sold it water, took its sewage. Austin used its bonding authority to the tune of several millions and millions of dollars to build big facilities for Austin. Austin could at any time step in and jerk this mud out. It could put it out of existence tomorrow. It has a one-way contract on that in the original consent agreement. And when times got tough and the mud went to Austin, the issue is, does the Constitution leave the issue of what you do with this mud that's underwater up to the political whims and the winds of politics in a single municipality? Or is it a matter of statewide concern because of what's affected? If Austin won't pull the string it's got, and the mud is going to sink underneath, and if the whole mud from day one has been set up where Austin dictated everything to do with it, doesn't the legislature under Article 16, Section 59, have the right to protect the interests of the people of the state in making sure that water is supplied, that people get water, in making sure that bonds don't go into default, in making sure that the credit rating of other utility districts, other political subdivisions, are not adversely affected by that? Who else is there to do it?
Help me understand how the others would be affected.
Well, you know, you start going, it's like any kind of bond. If you start having your political subdivisions, you know, they're all rated, and they get shakier and shakier. If you get the reputation down here in Texas that your political subdivisions that are issuing these bonds can start, you know, going bankrupt, defaulting on their obligations, that does affect. I think that very clearly is a state interest for all the political subdivisions, for the legislature itself. I think that's in addition to the whole problem of the right under Article 16, Section 59, the obligation, the duty, if you will, and that word is used in the statute, the duty of the legislature to see that water is given to these people, given to everybody in the state. That's
your argument is a broad one. And it would authorize the legislature to pass special statutes for every such district in the state.
I think they'd pass a general statute bound with each separate one by name. And I think that's correct, because I think that comes to the ultimate answer, Mr. Justice said. And that is, whom did the people of the state of Texas entrust with the final decision in these water areas? They did not entrust even these boards of mud. They did not entrust local politicians who had their own particular constituency to solve at that moment. They said, we want to make sure this is taken care of, and we want the legislature to have to do it.
Any other questions?
I do have a question on another issue, on the debt issue. You said Austin took 85% of the bond. Did Austin loan money to the MUD, and the MUD, how did that work?
No, Austin used the MUD's bonding authority to construct other facilities outside the MUD that would serve the MUD and it. Now, the way the percentage was divided, the district actually put out the bonds, but Austin guaranteed the whole thing. Okay, the bond's guaranteed by Austin. I'm fairly new to this one. I'm getting my facts just verifying. But the bonds were used to build facilities, a large part of them by Austin.
Okay, but Austin is itself indebted on 85% of the bond?
Right. Well, it's indebted. I would argue, clearly, it has an indebtedness that it fully agreed and contracted to for 100% of the contract bonds. The other problem is these other bonds, what they call the district bonds, which were the ones that were used to put in the sewage, which is the reason in the statute that the legislature left on the surcharge. I mean, all that's in the consent agreement. That means the surcharge is in the consent agreement. This deal was cut in 1982 between the city office and the MUD at the time of its creation.
It's only the sewage bonds where there was a risk of default to be a statewide board.
Well, I would think so. Because the city of Austin, I mean, I don't know whether the city of Austin is going to default on this bond, Mr. Justice, I really don't. I mean, you know, I mean, this was not to bail out the city of Austin.
Any other questions? Thank you, Council. The court is ready to hear arguments from appellate.
May it please the court, Mr. Carl Mayer and Mr. Bogus Jewell, arguments from the appellate. Mr. Mayer will open the
floor for 15 minutes. May it please the court, recognizing the intensity and complexity of the morning already, I will try to focus on some of the concerns that were raised by the questions of the court earlier. Why does Austin care about a few hundred acres and $20 million, more or less, of debt that's being foisted on? Certainly it cares about Maple Run. But I've passed out, or asked the marshal to pass out some maps to the court to illustrate why this is just the beginning of battles that will continue between the legislature and local governments around this state as Houston and Dallas and Austin struggle with growth. And I think it's important to understand why the constitutional principles that are embodied in this small case are important for the court to write on soon, to write on broadly, and to write on clearly.
One question before you begin. The city of Austin is responsible for
I'd like to try to clear up what these bonds are as opposed to conservation and reclamation districts, which is the city's concern is, as Justice Heck pointed out, the logical conclusion to be drawn from this argument that Article 59, Section 59 of Article 16 abrogates the rest of the Constitution is, it isn't just about MUDs, it could be about other constitutional rights. So, think back to Austin in 1976. That's one of your maps here, the extraterritorial jurisdiction of Austin, the boundaries of Austin. There's a few cities around outside the extraterritorial jurisdiction, but there's a great deal of land to be developed. Partnerships between cities all over this state were created to help both developers and cities with orderly growth. To set up the MUD initially required consent of the city of Austin. And it's because, as Justice Abbott's already noted, the water code provision that allows these creation of these MUDs is by virtue of Article 59. It sets up procedures dealing with MUDs. For example, it sets up procedures for dealing with financially troubled MUDs, which this MUD could have followed under Section 49456 of the Water Code. But the general kinds of arrangements made between cities and developers were, landowner has land out here that needs development. It needs a wastewater plant and it needs some infrastructure to get it out there. The city knows it will eventually want to annex other land. So the city agrees to use, allow the developer to use some of its credit to help build the lines and the necessary treatment plants, et cetera, to support the development. And typically, Maple Run's not atypical. An 85-15 split on that is not atypical in terms of getting the infrastructure out to the division. Within the division, however, the MUD has the sole responsibility for building that out through what are called district bonds. In this case, about $3.5 million. The bonds to get it out there that the Austin shares with are about $17 million, I think. But Austin does not share in the district bonds. That's entirely the responsibility of the municipal utility district, although Austin is a guarantor. Now, what has happened?
Of the district bonds?
Yes.
So if the MUD defaulted, what would be, what does the MUD owe that Austin wouldn't be a guarantor for?
Ultimately, the city of Austin would have to guarantee
everything.
So
is everything the MUD owes guaranteed by the city of Austin?
All the contract bonds are guaranteed by the city of Austin. The $3.5 million district bonds are not.
Is the Austin guarantor because of the consent agreement or because of the legislation?
It was because the consent agreement that was the Austin entered into with the developer in 82 contemplated, as did hundreds of these other agreements around the state, that by the city guaranteeing the contract bonds, that is the bonds to build the infrastructure to get it out to the division, there'd be a more favorable bond rating with the city's credit on there, and the developer would benefit from that by being able to sell houses at less money, and the development would take place. And what was contemplated is that the city would then annex the area once it was built out enough and generating enough tax revenue to make it a profitable time to annex. The city consents to annex, and it's anticipated that they would. The timing, however, is left to the city.
What is the source of the debt that the developers claim they are to be reimbursed?
There are certain under formulas that, again, are quite common in all of these arrangements. There are reimbursements that once the developer turns over all of the development and the city has taken control of the area through annexation, some of that money the city will have agreed to pay the developer back. Some of this finish out money in the division.
But not covered by the bond.
Right.
If this statute is unconstitutional and none of the actors will do anything voluntarily, what's going to happen?
Well, if, although there is no summary judgment proof of this, and I think it's important that Justice Baker pointed out this is tried on a very extensive stipulated facts. If the district feels that it's imminently going under and insolvent, there is a procedure under Texas Water Code Section 49456, which would allow them to go to the Texas Natural Resource Conservation Commission, present their case. TNRCC then investigates to see if, in fact, is the city meeting its tax burden? Is the district meeting its tax burden? Could they perhaps raise taxes and pick up the revenue? What will happen to the homeowners? How do we make an orderly transition? But there is a procedure that would actually allow the MUD to go into bankruptcy if it decided to take that route. MUDs have gone into bankruptcy in Texas. Homeowners have not been disadvantaged at all. As a matter of fact, in some around Houston, they've actually done better off after the MUDs have taken bankruptcy. So in terms of protecting the individual homeowners out there, there should be no concern.
MUD went into bankruptcy, the city's guarantees would be triggered, I think.
That's correct. On the contract bond.
Can you sue the city as the guarantor?
Ooh, I don't know.
Do they have sovereign immunity to that guarantee?
I do not know the answer to that. What now Austin faces, and why Austin is concerned about the principles that are violated in this case, is a situation that's faced now by Dallas and by Houston and by San Antonio and basically any other urban area. The other map that you now see is a 1996 map of Austin, and you will now see Austin's fear. Austin's fear is becoming another Detroit, an island that's isolated with no ability to get the tax base that it actually helped create through many of these agreements and other methods.
Well, in the blue, still extraterritorial jurisdiction of the city of Austin.
Exactly right. We want this court to say to the legislature that they cannot, by local and special bill, do anything in that ETJ. They cannot regulate the affairs of the city except through a general law. Think about how the legislative debate sounds if instead of just Austin being singled out only for one MUD, the city of Houston is up there with a general law, and the city of San Antonio, and the city of Dallas, and a bunch of similarly situated cities under a general law are now debating the rest of the legislature along with Austin. It's a different debate. It's a different democratic process. That's what we want to have happen, and we want the court to say that the legislature cannot do what it did to Austin, which this paranoia, well justified. The last session of the legislature did two things to Austin to put it in the worst possible situation. It said, you got to take the MUD deals that have turned bad. Maple Run, that's the Maple Run case. You got to take the one that's turned bad economically. It also says, you can't take the ones that have turned out good. Now, fortunately, that bill didn't pass. Austin was forced to de-annex a couple of lucrative MUDs. But there was a bill introduced that made it a certain amount of way that would have prohibited Austin from going forward with the consent agreements that it had negotiated and annexing those areas that had then become profitable. And that's our concerns here. We need a statement that says this stuff about conservation and reclamation district, look at the summary judgment. This isn't a conservation and reclamation district.
Council, question a little bit off the point. Who establishes the ETJ? Is it the legislature?
Well, there are a large body of general annexation laws that are contained, I'd say, primarily in the government code, and it's interesting to note that's what was, rather than amending the water code, 1261 is trying to amend the government code.
I understand, but who created the blue area? Was it the Texas legislature?
No. Well, I mean, in general, yes. By general law, in other words, they didn't single out Austin and say, this is your ETJ Austin, or this is your ETJ Houston. There is a general law that's applicable to establishing ETJs.
Okay.
If the court would, actually it's ironic that one of the cases that is cited by the appellants has to do with Harris County. There, I would suggest that's a blueprint for doing this right. The legislative history in the caption of the bill says it's an Article 16, Section 59 bill. There is a legislative history. There is a section dealing with it. It involves the silting in of the Houston Ship Channel, possibly losing one of the largest ports in the world. It involves the entire length of Buffalo Bayou that had flooded repeatedly and killed individuals. It was truly necessary for a special bill to come in and deal with that on a countywide basis. And there was plenty of public interest involved in protecting the Houston Ship Channel. That's a conservation and reclamation bill. And I think the court needs to tell the legislature that if they're going to try to sneak it by, that you're not going to allow that. That general home rule cities their affairs can only be affected by general laws. Same thing for school boards. Same thing for all units of local government that are close to the people. The legislature can't come in and single them out and try to regulate their affairs.
Can the legislature create a single MUD under Article 16, Section 15?
They could.
And why can't they then dissolve a single MUD?
I think they probably could. I thought about that some, and then it becomes a question of money. And it seems to me if the legislature wanted to dissolve the MUD and pick up the tab, it probably could. What's wrong in this case is they're asking Austin to pay for it. And Austin had nothing to do with the creation of those district bonds.
When you say those, which one?
The $3.5 million. The ones created in the district, sort of the board, quite like many other investors in Austin, Texas, believed there was going to be a build out of Austin in the 1980s. They sold a lot of bonds in anticipation of that. Like many Austin investors, it didn't happen. They made a bad deal.
So under Article 16, Section 59, the legislature can dissolve the Maple MUD, and as to the bonds that Austin guaranteed, they could tell Austin to eat those right now?
I think they would have to articulate, I think they would have to do that with an articulation of why singling out Austin and why singling out Maple Run was a substantial enough interest so as not to be a special bill.
Well, you just told me they could create one MUD constitution.
I think they probably could. I don't know that they've ever done.
I'm not understanding why they can't dissolve one MUD.
Well, they might can. I don't know that it's ever been done. I don't think by the power to create it, it gives them the power to abrogate the rest of the Constitution within a gulag, if you will, of a Maple Run district or a larger area where there are no constitutional rights just because they have the right to create it in the first place under a special bill. If there are no other questions, I'll give back some time.
But you do, a MUD just per se is sufficiently related to conservation that we're talking about Article 16, Section 59?
I don't know that there's a case that would say that. I would tell the court that there is an elaborate system that's been set up under the Water Code to deal with a lot of MUDs, and the authority for that provision is this Article 16, Section 59, which allows Texas Natural Resource Conservation Commission to handle a lot of these in a more administrative manner rather than pass the legislature passing a bill each time somebody wants to set up a MUD.
But what we're trying, I mean, you invited the court to write broadly.
Right.
I mean, what I'm trying to grapple with is when is something of constitutional magnitude and when is it not, so that we have to look at the special bill?
I think looking at the reality of the words of the Conservation and Reclamation Amendment and looking at what people really do mean when they said you can control floodwaters, you can control ports such as the city of Houston and the Ship Channel, you can keep Houston from subsiding. Those are the kinds of projects I think that are anticipated by that, not some financing mechanism that's to help developers and cities develop an area. I just don't believe that that's a conservation reclamation district. I don't think that's what the amendment intended. There's a case in there involving Deason, for example, Deason versus Orange, I believe, and people felt like we can't let the Orange County Water District burn down. We've got to be able to buy fire engines and fire equipment. We want to use some of these bonds to buy fire engines. And the Texas Supreme Court said no. That's not a conservation reclamation purpose. And what happened was the correct process was followed, the Constitution was amended, and you could now buy fire engines under Article 16, Section 59, but because the people amended the Constitution to allow it.
What's going on here that is analogous to a fire engine? Or to an old fire, pre-amendment fire engine?
To try to put it in the kindest manner, some officials that attempted self-government in a municipal utility district didn't want to raise taxes. no elected official wants to raise taxes. But because they had made some mistakes...
Are they already pay some of those people in that area pay some of the highest taxes for what they're getting in any other part of the state?
I don't know that the summary judgment proof does not show that. And the summary judgment proof shows, in fact, that there were many other districts in the state that were much more financially troubled than Maple Run. It is currently not true that they even pay the highest rate in the Travis County area. There are several other MUDs within our area that are higher that have not sought legislative relief. And I don't believe there's any evidence, summary judgment evidence, that would support that, despite that's their allegation.
Any other questions?
Thank you, Governor.
May it please the court. I am here representing the private landowners that are going to suffer the harm from this bill if it had been passed. And I want to just very briefly address the issues that they face and why they are here before the court and objected to the passage of and were part of the lawsuit that ended up striking down Senate Bill 1261. The argument that's been presented by the appellant is that the City of Austin, as part of the consent agreement and the parent of this MUD, eventually was going to be required to take over the obligations of the MUD. And therefore, it's okay if we speed up the process. That is like...
I'll give you 4 minutes.
I'll try to be even briefer. Your Honors, that's as if the bank calls you up and says, well, you've got a 30-year mortgage, but we've decided to make it into a demand note, and by the way, we're calling it due today. And in this case, it's even more egregious because they're passing that accelerated debt along to the folks who have unplatted property in that subdivision, such as my clients. These are the folks who will be basically having to bear the additional tax burden that the homeowners in that MUD are now being able to foist off. It's going to be foisted off to the city, and then the city has been invited to pass it along to us in this platting fee surcharge. In essence, what this bill represents then is not a reclamation for water purposes, but it is a financial shifting mechanism.
If the legislature hadn't done that, could the government of the MUD or the City of Austin have done it?
I believe that if they had, if the City of Austin had determined that it wanted to annex the MUD and take over its obligations, that is possible.
It could have imposed a platting fee.
If the city had determined that it wanted to impose a platting fee somewhere down the line, that is possible that it could have happened. But again,
could the city impose that platting fee just in one section? Or for one prior MUD, or would that have to be citywide?
No, that would have to be citywide because what you're doing is singling out certain landowners within the extraterritorial jurisdiction of the city.
Does this law allow the planning fee to just be on people who on land that was within the Maple Run?
That is correct, Your Honor. It's solely the unplatted property that is singled out here. So essentially, clients in my position are taking the burden of the land of the homeowners who feel like their taxes are simply too high. In fact,
Legislative history that the developers supported this statute?
The developers did not support Senate Bill 1261, no. In fact, they didn't get notice of it. So, in fact, what this is, it is not for water reclamation. What you really have here is a financial burden shifting from one group of owners who have houses in that district to another who have unplatted property, and that is simply unconstitutional under Article 1, Section 16 of this state constitution. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, Council.
May I please try to keep it brief since we've got not the end of the day. First, as to MUDs, this is mentioned, cited in the brief. This is a Xerox copy of Vernon's special water tables. that's in everybody's office. It's because all these general laws that were passed under the water code, including making mud districts, drainage districts, water conservation districts, all of them at one point were in Vernon's, in the black statutes, because they were all passed as general laws. Somebody down at West or somewhere made the decision that they were going to leave them out of the water code, and so they threw them in a separate body. So for those of you who want to see how many of these things have been created and get a good idea for it, under general laws of the state of Texas, because they cite it the general law, take a look at the pamphlet.
Do you agree with Mr. Steele that this, in essence, shifts the tax burden to the unplatted property owner? And do you agree that the city could not have done it had it incorporated the area without doing it citywide?
I don't know. That one went so far, because the platting fee has not been the focus. I really have not focused on that. Just a sec. I apologize. Let me say this, though, on the conservation aspect. I want to just read you some of the words from Article 16, Section 59, where the people declare that the preservation and conservation of all natural resources of the state are each and all hereby declared public rights and duties, and the legislature shall pass all laws, such as may be appropriate thereto. It goes on to say the legislature shall authorize such an indebtedness as may be necessary to provide for the improvements and the maintenance. As this court has previously held, it's in the case of cite and brief, maintenance means maintaining it, is not just fixing the tap when it doesn't work, but maintaining the services. So we think there was ample authority for the legislature under the existing cases which are cited in the brief. It sounds strange to say that this specific constitutional provision knocks out Article 3, Section 56, but it does in about five areas of the law, such as in education, it does in roads and highways. If you look at the decided cases cited in the brief, you'll see that it's quite common for the specific section, the broad grant, the subsequent grant, to knock it out. On the whole issue of the creation, this court, in one of the Edgewoods, I think it's three. I've got my Edgewoods a little confused. Talked about in the school, reminded the old case that said the legislature has a free hand. In the school cases, the legislature was given just authority to create school districts and to consolidate. That it's virtually no different from the power given to the legislature under Section 3. Section 59, Article 16. So just like in Edgewood, this court said the legislature has a free hand to abolish, move around, change. That case and those emerging constitutional principles that are being refined and re-refined also are applicable to this. And I join in urging that this is a very serious issue. The law in this area is very, very difficult to wade through. I know. I've been doing it for last 2.5 weeks, so it is not an easy topic. We believe that not only was annexation was, don't let the state fool you, in the consent agreement, which is in the record, or don't let the city fool you, at Austin fool you, in the consent agreement, it virtually says, you have to tell everybody who moves in here that you're going to be annexed by Austin. We have started the legal process of annexation. It said this in 1983. That mud's still sitting out there, unannexed, middle-class homes, $80,000, $90,000 of stuff, not mansions in the sky, with 400-something units instead of the 2,000. So all this great and glorious, Austin backed out on its deal with mud. This was always its mud. Read the consent agreement form, which is in the record.
It's your position that any law relating to creation of a school district, changing its boundaries or its financial obligations is valid under Article 7 of the Constitution, and therefore Article 3, Section 56 never applies.
Hey, Ms. Justice, my argument that the same rationale that was used to reach that conclusion is equally applicable to the conclusion with regard to Article 16, Section 56. There is no difference.
So, far as one can find anything affecting the school district, it's upheld as a, it's not a violation of special laws, then you would go that far on the MUD.
Yes, sir. My point is that the grant is Section 59. It's an unusual section. It's come up several times, and every time it's been ruled that it is not a local or special law grant. Fifth Circuit's even ruled that, has taken this court and that statute to say that it gives plenary power to the legislature, to speak. Absolute power. And what I'm saying is the same grant of what the legislature is supposed to do with regard to schools with our seminar officer up there is the same. I mean, you could play around with words. Even here they say efficient once, I think. But an efficient system. But it is the same grant the legislature's given over here to create these districts and take care of this problem, because the people of the state of Texas determined it couldn't be left up to every individual hip-shooting local politician.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you, Council. That concludes the oral argument on this call. The foregoing four causes are submitted on briefs and oral arguments. The marshal will adjourn the court.
All right.